Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello and welcome back. Today we'll be covering Alma chapters 56 through 59. Our last video talked about Moroni and Teancum attempting to retake the Nephite cities that the Lamanites had captured near the East Sea. This video will talk about what had been happening on the opposite side of the country along the West Sea. And now we'll take a minute to ask a trivia question. We're going to do it a little bit differently today. We're going to ask the question now at the beginning of the video, and we'll answer it toward the end of the same video. Here's the question. The Book of Mormon specifically names three people killed by Teancum. What were their names? Since we're in the war chapters, I'm asking a war-related trivia question. We'll answer that toward the end of today's video. And now on to Alma 56. Back in Alma chapter 52, in the 26th year, Moroni had stationed armies on the southern border along the West Sea, and then he traveled northeast to join Teancum in Bountiful on the opposite side of the Nephite nation. Now in the 30th year, Moroni received a letter from Helaman telling him what had happened on the west border during the past 4 years. One of the things that we find is that compared to today, communication between Nephite cities was extremely limited. For 3 years, Moroni had no idea how the battle was progressing on the west side of the country. And this is a repeated pattern. In our next video, we'll see that Moroni was unaware that the nation's capital had been taken over by a rebellious faction. So communication was very limited. And Helaman's letter wasn't just a quick update, it covered 3 years. In this letter, Helaman talked about the 2,000 young Lamanites who had taken up arms that we met in Alma 53. On their first mission, Helaman led this group of young warriors to the city of Judea, where Antipas, a Nephite general, was scrambling, trying to build fortifications with his men. Antipas had lost many of his men in battle, and the Lamanites had taken the cities of Manti, Zeezrom, Cumani, and Antipara. Antipas had only 6,000 men in his army, and so he was thrilled to get 2,000 more, even if they were stripling young warriors. When Amoron, the Lamanite king who was leading the military on the west side of the country, when Amoron learned that Antipas had received reinforcements, he ordered his men to not attack, but instead to just try to retain the cities that they had already captured. This gave Antipas and Helaman time to finish fortifying the city of Judea, but left them with a different problem. How do you retake a captured city when the army inside the city has you outnumbered? It's one thing to defend yourself against a larger army when you're inside of a fortress, but how do you go on the offensive when you're outnumbered? And that becomes a repeated theme in this video. How do you do the impossible with limited resources? At first, Antipas hoped the Lamanite army would make things easy for him and attack the cities north of Judea. This would allow him to attack them from behind. But the Lamanites expected such a trap, and they wouldn't leave the cities which they had won. But at the same time, they couldn't sit idly either, because the longer they waited, the stronger the Nephites got. Zarahemla kept sending provisions and soldiers to join Antipas and his army. So the Lamanites decided that they would neutralize the help that the Nephites were getting, and they decided to block or intercept the delivery of new supplies. When Antipas saw this, he came up with a plan. He would use a supply caravan to lure the Lamanites out of their strongholds. Antipara was the city that had the largest Lamanite force, so that became his target. He ordered Helaman and his 2,000 young Ammonites to walk by Antipara, pretending to carry supplies to the seaside city just beyond it. Antipas hoped that the Lamanite army would leave their stronghold to follow after Helaman's men. and so then he could attack him from behind. Things went just as Antipas hoped they would. Helaman's army was spotted by Lamanite spies in Antipara, and before long, the Lamanite army was chasing after them. So Antipas and his men chased after the Lamanites. Helaman and his young soldiers saw the Lamanites behind them and fled northward. As the day progressed, the Lamanites realized they were being followed by Antipas's army, so they marched even more quickly. Antipas had not reached the Lamanites before nightfall, and the Lamanites hadn't overtaken Helaman's men either. Before the sun came up the next morning, the Lamanites had already resumed their pursuit, and Helaman's young warriors continued to flee into the wilderness. They ran all day, not stopping until nightfall. And then, like the previous day, the Lamanites began their pursuit even before dawn, leaving Helaman's army barely enough time to escape. But suddenly, Helaman looked behind him, and the Lamanites weren't following him anymore. This created a dilemma. The question was whether the Lamanites had been overtaken by Antipas or whether they had just fallen back, hoping that the Lamanites would turn around and then they could have him. In his own words, here's what Helaman said, "And now I say unto you, my beloved brother Moroni, that never had I seen so great courage, nay, not amongst all the Nephites. Even so they said unto me, Father, behold, our God is with us, and he will not suffer that we should fall. Then let us go forth. We would not slay our brethren if they would let us alone. Therefore let us go, lest they should overpower the army of Antipas." So they advanced upon the Lamanite army. What had happened was that Antipas and his men were afraid that the Lamanites would catch Helaman's band, so they had marched at breakneck speed with almost no rest, and when they finally caught the Lamanites, they were nearly too exhausted to fight. A terrible battle began. Antipas and many of the Nephite leaders were very quickly slain, and without guidance, the rest of the men began to give way, and seeing the Nephite confusion, the Lamanites stepped up the aggression. And it was at this moment that Helaman and his sons hit the Lamanite army from behind. They fell on the rear of the Lamanite army with such force that the whole army forgot about Antipas's men, and they turned to fight Helaman and his young soldiers. That gave the remainder of Antipas's force time to regroup and re-enter the battle. And then, caught between the two armies, the Lamanites dropped their weapons and surrendered. Helaman counted his men. Verse 56, "But behold, to my great joy, there had not one soul of them fallen to the earth. Yea, and they had fought as if at the strength of God. Yea, never were men known to have fought with such miraculous strength. And with such mighty power did they fall upon the Lamanites that they did frighten them. And for this cause did the Lamanites deliver themselves up as prisoners of war." Part of Antipas's army escorted the captured Lamanites off to Zarahemla, and the rest of them marched back to Judea with Helaman and his army. With Antipas having been killed in battle, Helaman appears to become the head of the Nephite forces. Amron, the king of the Lamanites, was concerned because his largest army had just been captured and was being held prisoner at Zarahemla. So he wrote a letter to Helaman asking they release the captured army in exchange for Antipara being returned to the Nephites. Helaman responded that he was pretty confident that they could take Antipara on their own, but he would be willing to exchange prisoners. Amron refused to exchange prisoners, and so Helaman got ready to attack the city of Antipara, but no attack was needed. When the Lamanites learned an attack was planned, they fled to the other Lamanite cities, leaving Antipara for the Nephites to retake and occupy. So one city had now been taken, three more to go. More reinforcements and food arrived from Zarahemla. Pahoran sent 6,000 additional men and also 60 more Lamanites. Helaman next set his sights on Cumani. He planned to retake this one by siege, by starving them out. They surrounded the city for several days and waited for provisions to arrive. Late one night, the expected supply train arrived and Helaman seized the provisions, captured the men. Helaman sent his food and supplies to his men back at Judea, and he sent the prisoners off to Zarahemla. Shortly thereafter, the Lamanite army in Cumani finally gave in and surrendered. So, although they had taken the city without bloodshed, which was a good thing, they now had more captive Lamanites than they could handle. Rebellions and uprisings were frequent, and they had to kill more than 2,000 prisoners just to maintain order. They decided to send the captured men from Cumani to Zarahemla as well. A chief captain named Gid and part of the Nephite army escorted the prisoners off towards Zarahemla. And this reduced the size of Helaman's army. The day after they sent the prisoners away, Helaman and his now smaller army were attacked by a very large Lamanite army. Despite being very badly outnumbered, Helaman's 2,060 young Lamanites fought bravely and fearlessly. Helaman reported on this in his letter to Moroni. But behold, my little band of 2,060 fought most desperately. Yea, they were firm before the Lamanites and administered death unto all those who opposed them. And as the remainder of our army were about to give way before the Lamanites, behold, those 2,060 were firm and undaunted. Yea, and they did obey and observe to perform every word of command with exactness. Yea, and even according to their faith it was done unto them. And I did remember the words which they said unto me that their mothers had taught them. But notwithstanding their valiant effort, the enemy was simply too great in number. And just as the Lamanite army was about to overpower the Nephite army, Gid and his soldiers, who had been escorting the prisoners, returned unexpectedly and joined the battle. And the influx of Gid's men, combined with the efforts of the unwavering Lamanite youths, it tipped the scales for the Nephites. The Lamanites retreated, and they fled back to the city of Manti, pursued by Helaman and his army. After the Lamanites reached Manti, the Nephites went back to Cumani and counted their losses. Although they had won the battle, they had lost a lot of men. But to the astonishment of the whole army, not one of the 2,060 Ammonite youths had been killed. They had all been wounded, and 200 of them had fainted from blood loss, but they were all still alive. And then Gid explained what had happened. He had been taking the prisoners to Zarahemla. He had not gone far from Cumani when several Nephite spies ran towards him shouting that a mighty Lamanite army was advancing on Cumani and was going to destroy it. When the Lamanite prisoners heard this, they revolted and turned on their captors, and Gid's men were forced to kill more than half the prisoners, and the rest of the prisoners escaped into the wilderness. And since they didn't have anyone to guard, Gid and his men rushed back to Cumani and arrived in time to save the Nephite army. Helaman's next objective was to take Manti. He didn't have numbers for an attack, and the Lamanites couldn't be lured away from their stronghold, having learned from previous experience that that was not a good idea. Needing more men than he had, Helaman focused on maintaining the cities that they had retaken, and he waited for more reinforcements and provisions from Zarahemla. But they waited in vain. Month after month rolled by. Meanwhile, the Lamanites were receiving a steady supply of food and soldiers. When the Nephites were finally on the verge of starvation, a little bit of food arrived, accompanied by 2,000 men, and although the food was welcome and the reinforcements were needed, it wasn't nearly enough. The Lamanites were simply too numerous. Helaman's army felt that defeat was inevitable, given their circumstances. They were nearly starving. They couldn't expect any help from Zarahemla, the capital, so they turned to the Lord in prayer. Verse 11, "And it came to pass that the Lord our God did visit us with assurances that he would deliver us. Yea, insomuch that he did speak peace to our souls and had granted us great faith and did cause us that we should hope for our deliverance in him." This answer was a little bit encouraging, and it gave him an idea. Helaman's army went over by Manti and camped out near the city on the side facing the wilderness. When the Lamanites sent spies and counted the men, they were shocked by how few of them there were. They assumed that Helaman had put his army there to intercept incoming supplies, and so they decided to go out and destroy him. But it was a trap. As the Lamanites prepared to attack, Teomner and Gid, two other Nephite leaders, each with a small team of men, hid in the wilderness. When the Lamanite army attacked, Helaman and his army waited as long as they could, and then they fled into the wilderness with the Lamanites in hot pursuit. The Lamanites were in such a hurry that they didn't even see Teomner and Gid's forces as they passed right in between them. After the Lamanites rushed on by, Teomner, Gid, and their men emerged from their hiding places. They cut off the Lamanite spies, and then they ran to the city of Manti. Very few men had been left to guard the city, and the ones that were left were quickly destroyed, and the city of Manti was captured. Meanwhile, Helaman and his army, fleeing before the Lamanites, they began to veer off toward the land of Zarahemla. When the Lamanites saw this, they were afraid that they were being led into a trap, and so they stopped chasing Helaman. And they turned around and started walking back towards Manti. When night fell, they had not yet reached Manti, and so they set up camp. But the Nephites took a different route, and they marched back to Manti, marching all night, and they arrived before the Lamanites did. The next morning, the Lamanites arose, and they began to march back toward the city of Manti, only to find that the Nephites had captured the city and were waiting inside. They panicked, and they scattered into the wilderness. And from here, we'll learn this later, they traveled over near the East Sea and joined with the Lamanite forces, who were fighting against Moroni and his men. And with that, Helaman finished his epistle to Moroni. Helaman, in his letter, told Moroni that he had not received very many supplies, and he was worried that there might be trouble brewing in Zarahemla. And Helaman didn't have nearly enough men to defend the country against so many Lamanites. Quote, "But behold, it mattereth not," he said. "We trust God will deliver us, notwithstanding the weakness of our armies." He ended by talking about his 2,060 Lamanite sons. Many were injured, but they were all still alive, faithful, and strictly observing the commandments. When Moroni received Helaman's letter, he rejoiced to learn that the Lamanites' western invasion had been repulsed and the invaders had been driven away, and he spread the word so that others could also rejoice. Inspired by Helaman's report, Moroni began forming a plan to retake the cities captured by the Lamanites on the Eastern Sea. But even while he was making plans, the Lamanite army attacked the city of Nephihah, a city along the nation's southern border. The Lamanite army there had been joined by the Lamanites from the city of Manti, who had recently been driven away by Helaman's army. When these soldiers joined the Lamanite army, their numbers were so great that the inhabitants of Nephi were simply forced to flee. Knowing that cities were much easier to defend than to conquer, Moroni had asked the government in Zarahemla to send reinforcements to Nephihah. As the people fleeing Nephihah arrived in Moroni's camp, he learned that the government had never sent the requested assistance, and he was angry at the government. And we'll cover that next time. But now it's time to wrap up and answer our trivia question. The Book of Mormon specifically names three people killed by Teancum. What were their names? The first was Morianton. The people in the city of Morianton had decided to flee from the land of Zarahemla into the north country, north of the narrow neck of land. Moroni didn't want to have to deal with an enemy on the north, so he sent Teancum to keep Morianton and his people from leaving. Teancum tried to bring them back peacefully, but Morianton fought back and was slain by Teancum. The second was Amalickiah. Teancum was angry at Amalickiah for starting a war with the Nephites, so he snuck into his tent at night and killed him with a javelin, undetected. The last one is Amaron, Amalickiah's brother. But that's a bit of a spoiler because we haven't gotten there yet. That one will be in our next video. And we will see you next time.